All right, so take a look at your binder. Just to review real quick, here's where we're at. So covered the parents' priorities already. I think that was Jay. And then last week, John Rubel covered the parents' goal. And we were introduced to critical passage, so critical verse, Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. That's part of what your handout is really about. Without covering the same ground again, that is so critical and pivotal. I mean, you as parents are going to have to live by this verse. I wanted to give it to you. I don't want to review everything we've already touched on. I know John covered it basically last time, but this handout to explain a little bit is something I ripped off of a family ministries pastor, my old church, Todd Murray, and it's a great little summary of Ephesians 6, 4, sort of breaking it down even visually on here's our responsibilities, here's how we carry it out. And there's also, so like that's the first page, that's that diagram. And then if you flip to the next two pages, so on the front and back, there's the two parts there of your command. The negative on the front part and the positive on the back part, which I don't think actually the material here in the Parenting for Life syllabus at least has gotten into the negative part yet. So you remember we did the bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. We did that part last week, but kind of skipped over the front part. There's a first part to that verse I think is very helpful that you have there. Explained, and then also there's a great list out of Lou Priolo's book, Heart of Anger, 25 Ways to Provoke Your Children to Anger. That actually, I think the reason why our syllabus doesn't dive into it quite yet, even though it's in Ephesians 6, 4, that I think is going to be covered in Lesson 8, so in more detail. So, but if you want to be convicted, you know, just read that list. It's brutal. Anyway, so Ephesians 6, 4, super helpful. Your handout is for that. I'm not going to go over the handout. But just a quick review. How would you summarize, then, your goal as a parent from last time? Just how would you summarize it? You guys remember? We'll see how John did. How would you summarize it? Or you could even cheat and look in your syllabus. I mean, I already gave you the verse. Anybody? Goal is getting my kids into good college. Is that right? Giving them a good education, helping them land a solid career. Goal is to even save my kids.
I think I got it. To bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord.
Yes. Did you just read the verse?
I did.
Amazing. See, it's that easy. And I have a cup that says, I have a mug, a coffee mug that says, the goal for today, keeping the tiny humans alive. Anybody have that? I don't know where I got it. That was good. Yeah, the goal is that obviously to obey Ephesians 6, 4 as parents, but I would just add this then. The key word, if you remember from last time, then is it's faithfulness to that, right? And if that wasn't clear, I mean, that should be clear. Don't walk away from this and not get this. So to summarize, just as review, the parents' goal, and this is going to be so key for even what we talk about today, because we need to understand that the parents' goal isn't to generate some kind of preferred outcome, even if that outcome or that desire that you have is good. Like, you want your kids to come to Christ, obviously. But there is a, I guess you could say, more ultimate goal, in a sense, that God holds you responsible to as a parent. And that is to be faithful, to obey Ephesians 6, 4. And you notice Ephesians 6, 4 doesn't give us a promise as to, okay, then so here if you do this, your children will turn out this way. And that's really important for us as we get into our lesson this morning. So we're going to turn our attention now. We're in lesson 3. I think it's on your syllabus. It's on page 20. Let's make your way there. Lesson 3. And it's called the parents' challenges. In other words, just to give you an idea, here's where we're going. This basically is, okay, so now that we have the parents' priorities, now that we have the parents' goals, the question this morning is, what are all the things that make it hard? What are all the things that make it very difficult and challenging for us to be faithful to carry out Ephesians 6:4? And I was just thinking to myself, you know, like as I have four kids, all of you, I think, know them. 7, 5, 3, 1. You know, Jay, his kids are out of the house. John, his kids are much older than mine. So I was thinking, man, my kids are the youngest of these elders who are teaching this. This is the perfect lesson for me. Like, because this is the only one I really feel like I, in some ways, qualified to teach the challenges. Like, I know what the challenges are. So it's interesting. Just again, a quick roadmap is where we're going. There's the material lays out three major categories of these challenges. If you've looked ahead, and then I would encourage you, you know, as the weeks go on, review, maybe even look ahead just to see and familiarize yourself with this material. But notice there's just to tell you where we're going, there are three major categories that the material is going to place these things in. And that's keeping the right motivation, keeping the right focus, and then keeping the right balance. So those are the three, the motivations, focus, and then balance. And if you think about just even you back up and just think about those categories, even that progression, I think it's helpful. Motivations being the issues in your own heart, the sins in your own heart, perhaps the most important, the biggest reason why it's a challenge for us as parents. And then moving from that then to our focus, that is just sometimes we tend to forget over time. You might go through, hey, Parenting for Life class, did it, got it. But then 2 years later, you're like, ah, man, I need to go through that again. And I would say absolutely, because we need to be reminded about things. Sometimes we lose our focus. So that may not be sin necessarily in the heart, but we just forget. And especially, I think, when we're in the weeds sometimes in the busyness of family life. So we need to keep our focus. And then lastly, the furthest from the sin category then is balance. That is, these are good things that will constantly need to be adjusting, even I would say as our kids grow, and you'll see that kind of the, as you know, when we get into that section, balance is something you're always going to have to work on, and it's usually between things that are not good and bad, right? It's going to be better and best, those kinds of decisions. So that's kind of the flow. Let's start with the greatest challenge overall, to shepherding your child's heart. See what I did there? That's the book. What's the greatest challenge to shepherding your child's heart? Well, your own heart. Your own heart. Look at number one there. So letter A in your syllabus. Keeping the right motivation, page 20. Take your Bible, if you have it there, and turn with me to Numbers 20. Be good to bring your Bible to this class. Be good. Numbers chapter 20. You know, this is the famous story that of when Moses disobeyed God in bringing water from the rock for the Israelites to drink. You remember they were complaining. God gives them some instructions. You know, they're wandering around in the wilderness, and this isn't the first time he's had to do this, remember? Just look at verse 7. So we'll just begin reading verse 7. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, So here are God's instructions to Moses, the patriarch. Okay, we'll just consider him the daddy of the Israelites for right now, okay, in this parenting class. Here's God's instructions to Moses, and pay attention to them, okay? Take the rod, and you and your brother Aaron assemble the congregation and speak to the rock before their eyes, that it may yield its water. You shall thus bring forth water for them out of the rock and let the congregation and the beasts drink. Now, there are God's instructions, so let's see how Moses does. Notice verse 9. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, just as he had commanded him. So far, so good. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly before the rock. Yes. And he said to them, you see his first mistake? Who is Moses supposed to speak to? Was that? The rock. And he said to them, listen now, you rebels. Do you ever find yourself saying this to your kids? Listen now, you rebels. Bunch of complaining rebels. Shall we bring forth rock? Or what rock? Shall we bring forth water for you out of this rock? So you think, I mean, what would Aaron have been thinking? He's checking his script, like, God, don't think God told us to do this, say this. Then Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod. He wasn't supposed to do that either. But notice how kind God is. And, I mean, reading this, I'm just even thinking about my parenting sometimes. God is kind, isn't he, to give you some even blessed outcomes in moments when you don't carry out the commandments that he gave us all that well. It's a grace from God, but notice it happens here, and water came forth abundantly. And the congregation and their beasts drank. So what was the outcome? Well, the outcome was ultimately the same. The outcome was ultimately what was intended by God. The congregation stopped complaining. Everyone got their water. And we would say success, right? Notice the rest of the paragraph, though, verses 12 and 13. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you have not believed me to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. Those were the waters of Meribah, because the sons of Israel contended with the Lord, and he proved himself holy among them. You see, God points out to Moses here that he is not just concerned about an outcome, but he is also concerned about our hearts as we go about our parenting. I mean, the same is true for us. In fact, did you notice in verse 12, when he talks to Moses and explains to him afterwards, the issue wasn't ultimately, in God's mind, an issue of Moses' actions, but instead, he corrects Moses on a heart issue of unbelief. So, you know, we would just say here at the outset, parents, God cares about your heart motive as you parent, perhaps as much, maybe we would even say this, for your sake, even more than the outcome of your kids. You can't be faithful to Ephesians 6:4 without the right motive. You can't, period. You may even get some of the desired outcomes. Your children may even get saved. But if your motive was wrong, you have not been considered faithful. This is as foundational as it gets. And so we have to lay this here at the beginning. The reality is, you know, if we have the wrong motive, it will just like Moses here, listen, it will inevitably affect the way you parent also, okay? Do you understand that? I mean, it did for Moses. Instead of bringing loving correction, you may respond with harsh self-righteousness like Moses did here. And while God may even, like I said, be gracious to you and do a work in your children, you will still have sinned. And that will not have been good. So God is not just interested in the ends, but He also cares about the means and the motive in your parenting. And that's why this one is so critical. So that's what this verse is all about. And we're given under this heading here in the material three really overall categories of competing motives here in our material. I think that's kind of how I was reading them. These are three categories of competing motives. Notice the first one. Pleasing God versus pleasing self. Pleasing God versus pleasing self. In other words, here's how I was thinking about this one. This is, am I after God's glory in my parenting, or am I after my own glory in my parenting? Am I after God's glory and what He wants, or am I after what I want in my parenting? You know, this in our culture today, you think this is a major issue. I mean, you go out into the world and you ask the question, you know, how do you view your kids? Well, for many, there's a reason why they don't have kids. and it's all selfish. I think of 2 Timothy 3:4. You can write it in there if you want. I think of that category. It's that long list of Paul is saying to Timothy, look, our culture is going from bad to worse. And then he gives that long list of vices. You know, at the end there, he says, men are going to be lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. And that is so true. And that is a massive danger when it comes to your kids, parenting. But of course, you know, like our motive at the end of the day must be God's glory and His pleasure, 1 Corinthians 10:31. Whether you eat, drink, parent, whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. I would even, you know, a similar statement there, Colossians 3:17 and 2 Corinthians 5:9. Our aim is to be pleasing to Him. That's our true motive. When we have a selfish motive, you think about this then, as opposed to God glorifying one, it will affect two things, I think, okay? The way we view our kids and the way we discipline them. Let me ask you, how do you think it'll affect the way you view your kids? How will you view your children if you're only concerned about pleasing yourself? Brandon?
They're going to be little obstacles.
They're obstacles.
Yeah, Yeah. It
happens a lot, doesn't it?
Or
they're tools.
Yeah,
tools to an end.
Done.
Yeah, they're... Yeah, you have...
Farm hands.
I mean, look, there's a good way to do that, right? But it depends on your motive. Right?
Yeah.
How else? Anything else?
Frustration.
Yeah, absolutely. It goes along with obstacles. I wrote down here, hindrances. My kids are hindrances. They're annoyances. They're obstacles. They're inconveniences. I didn't even think of tools, but...
Yeah. My friend, I need someone to be able to...
Yeah, they meet your needs, basically. It terminates upon your desires. What you can get out of them or what they are keeping you from, right? That's going to be your perspective on your children. There are little trials in your life. And instead of how the Bible views them, right? Psalm 127, they are blessings, they are gifts, they are privileges, they're a stewardship from God. Like if you're not careful and you are selfishly motivated, you will grow bitter and you will grow resentful towards them. Look, even when they can't understand anything, I mean, babies... parents of infants can understand this. You know, my mom, my wife, my children's mom, you know, it's like she just told me, you know, we've done this 4 times. It's amazing when they're little and they're just crying in their crib. And it's like they don't understand, but you're so angry at them. It's like, why are you angry at them? They don't understand. It's because I want to go to sleep. And true. So, you know, another example of this is when they're messing up your clean house, you just got it cleaned. When they're getting in the way of your plans, interrupting what you're trying to finish or enjoy, TV, I just want to finish the game. I just want to get the laundry done. Okay, I just need to get the laundry done. I need to get the dishes cleaned. I need to get my Bible reading done. I can't even sit down and read my Bible without an interruption. We often think about this, though. This is the heart issue. And here's what's so ironic about this. And this is why I say shepherding a child's heart begins with shepherding your own heart. Because look, what we then end up and are tempted to do to our kids is what they do when we get in the way of what they want, right? That's critical. We need to model for them the right response.
So you're saying, like, instead of having, like, a serving heart at all times, even when it's inconvenience, we're teaching them, that's not what you do.
Yeah. I mean, how can we, with any integrity, turn around and say, well, you need to respond this way to trials or inconveniences when they become an inconvenience and we blow up at them?
Do what I say, not what I do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's critical. And that's one of the dangers, like in that handout, of provoking your kids when you're hypocritical in that sense. So one other question here. So it'll affect the way we view our children. It'll also affect the way that we discipline them, okay? How will this kind of selfishness keep us from being faithful in the way that we discipline our kids? Ever thought about that? How would a selfish concern for my glory, my desires only, affect the way you go about disciplining your children? Ever thought through that? This one's a little harder.
Consequences based on, like, inconvenience versus disobedience.
Yep.
And dishonor to the Lord.
Yeah, that you'll only bring consequences when they mess something up of yours, rather than when they sin, right? It's that quick, short-term goal, rather. Whatever we want in the moment, whether it's peace and quiet, not shepherding their heart in that moment or seeing it as a ministry opportunity. Look at page 21. This is parents. Therefore, parents must view the problems that come up as opportunities for teaching and training that will bring glory to God, not merely bring about their own pleasure. And I would say it usually also, if it's a selfish motive, it'll affect our parenting in this way, not just in what we correct them about, but also how we correct them, right? There was a reason why Moses called them rebels. Because it had gotten personal. He was annoyed. We need to view our children as not inconveniences, but they are privileges. And then in those moments when you hear something going on in the other room, or, you know, your little one, you know, barges in on you, you've got to get your heart to the place where you say, this is a great opportunity. You know, again, Todd Murray, drawing a lot of wisdom from him, obviously, he has said, he's a John Newton expert. So John Newton, he said it when he was in his study, there was an unexpected knock on the door. He said that John Newton learned, he said, to train his heart to say, this is not an interruption. It's just an appointment I didn't know I had. And God sovereignly directed it to me. Yeah, that's kind of how we need to view our kids.
Well, what's interesting is in the business world, we we'll say that every interaction with a customer counts, like every interaction from a sales perspective, every interaction you have with a customer, it's a touch point with the customer that's you can add value or bring that relationship closer.
Yep.
It should be the same way, like,
yeah,
but to do something else, but you know what, that means I get the chance to talk to you right now.
Yeah.
A chance that otherwise I would not have.
Yeah, there's value in that.
Yeah.
It's not wasted. You know, and I would say this happens. I can't tell you how many times I've had to do this for myself, and then also when Melissa texts me, you know, it's one of the days, and it's like I've not been able to get anything done. We've had to remind one another. Yes, but that is not a wasted day, right? It's, you know, like if all day you've been in the bathroom giving what we call reminders, and you've been just parenting, it's like, and I sometimes have to stop her and say, just listen to what you're saying. All I've done today was parent my kids. It's like, good. Then you're being faithful. The tendency, if we're selfish, is to think, but I didn't get what I wanted to get done, or I didn't get what I needed to get done. But the reality is God says, you know what you needed to get done? What you got done, your parenting.
It has to do with our priorities.
It does.
If you ask somebody, did you have a good day?
Yeah.
How do you measure good?
Yeah. Yeah. So another way this selfishness will hinder our faithfulness to discipline is also then, even when our desires for an intended outcome might align with the scriptures, we'll become pragmatic in our attempts to get that goal if we have the wrong motive. So I was thinking about this, you know, we all obviously, I would hope, want our kids to come to Christ. We want our kids to be saved. We want them to behave a certain way, perhaps. But you know what? If you're selfish in that motive, I mean, you can have a selfish motive to that good desire too. Do you understand that? That can become an idolatry in the church. If that is true, we will struggle to do what God requires of us when we don't see immediate results. And we, you know, there's another temptation in that difficult day of this is all I've been doing. The next day, the question is going to pop up, does this even work? Right? That's a challenge. You know where that question comes from? Pride. We want the short answer, we want what works, and we don't trust what God has already said because we're not seeing an outcome that we desire. That's exposing a heart of selfishness that doesn't want the good thing for God's glory, but wants the good thing for my own glory. You see? So the motive is to please the Lord. That's the only way. Listen, here's why this is so critical. That is the only way you will persevere in hope when you're in those seasons of just you're slugging it out and you're not seeing a lot of fruit, but you know what God calls you to do. The joy of the Lord is your strength in those seasons. So faith in God will lead to faithfulness. Which means then we also have to remember, notice on page 22 here, just before the next section, page 22, we also then need to remember this, that the child's response is not necessarily the measure of biblical parenting. Now, you know, before you had kids, I'm sure you've seen others, kids acting up. What have you said to yourself in your mind? Not going to happen. Not going to happen to me. The reality is, until you get in that position, right, you probably have thought at some point, man, or been tempted to draw that conclusion, you know what? I bet that has to do with a lack of faithfulness in the home. And I would just say we have to be careful here, because that's not always the case. A child's response is not the sole measure of a parent's faithfulness, right? Faithfulness is the issue, and just like in any ministry, it does not always guarantee an outcome, but it does please the Lord. So we need to remember that as well. So that's pleasing God versus pleasing self. That's a major danger. Major danger. Second, competing motive. Notice pleasing God versus pleasing others. This is another big one. Biblical category for this. Anybody know what it's called? Fear of man. This is fear of man applied to parenting. The major temptation, I'm sure you've all experienced this already, in parenting to be controlled by what others think about you, how you parent, your kids, what they reflect about you. You know, again, you're now on the receiving end of the judgments that you made when you were single. It's like, and you know what you thought, so you know what they're thinking. I would say two things are really, there are two sides of this same sin. Fearing man, or the other way the Bible describes this is desiring the approval of men. You know, those are two sides to the same issue and same sin. So I would add here in your syllabus, if you're writing, taking notes, John, unless you borrowed a packet, John 5:44. Jesus says to the religious leaders, how can you believe when you receive glory from one another and do not seek the glory that is from the one and only God? I mean, it's amazing that in the scriptures, God calls that little sin that that little fear in your mind of what are they going to think of me? Do you know, God says that is a major issue, actually. That is the difference between saving faith in some instances, especially in the Gospel of John, and not saving faith, of receiving glory from one another or receiving glory from your Father in heaven. You can add to John 12, verse 42 and 43. The commentary there, John says, remember, he says, nevertheless, many even of the rulers believed in Jesus, but because of the Pharisees, they were not confessing him. So it wasn't true saving faith. Why? For fear. Fear of man. That they would be put out of the synagogue, for they loved the approval of men rather than the approval of God. So even in that passage, you have both sides. You have the fear part and the approval part, and they're one and the same. But we need to think about this in that same way, with that same weight. This is going to keep me. If anything, look, if you're already a Christian, then thank the Lord for that, and you won't lose your salvation because of the fear of man, but it will keep you, at the end of the day, here's the principle, it will keep you from seeking God's glory in your parenting. It'll hinder you from that, big time. So add one more, Proverbs 29:25. The fear of man brings a snare, but he who trusts in the Lord will be exalted. Look, if you're concerned about what others think about your parenting, then what God thinks, I mean, it's not going to matter to you in the moment. And if you're so consumed about what others think, the Bible says, the language in Proverbs 29:25 is that of a trap. The Bible says you'll always feel caught, right? You'll always feel trapped in scenarios. You'll never know what to do because there are an infinite number of opinions, as many people as there are parents in the world, right? And you can't please all of them, and you'll not know. That's not a good place to be. You know, as a pastor, this is a particular temptation for me, as you can imagine, because people are watching. You know, you're watching your kids. I've actually had more than one person, critique my parenting as a pastor. And that's hard. It's good for me, but it's hard. What happens to your parenting when you want to please others more than God? You will make others the standard and not the Bible. That's a problem. Well, this is what Jason does. Or when your reputation is at stake and your kids are acting up, what do you do? What's that? Yeah, because you don't want anybody to see you blow up, you're like pinching them extra hard or something, like underneath the arm and the back somewhere, and. You could get discouraged. You ever done this? As you've compared yourself to others, you can become discouraged by certain standards or certain measures that aren't necessarily biblical. Why is it that the Hardings kids, why do the Hardings trust their children to sit by themselves when they're just up on stage playing? I don't even trust my child in a straitjacket. Like why? I mean, you can become discouraged big time. Like that is all. You got to understand fear of man. Now, does this mean, like the material points out, does this mean we don't learn from the wisdom of others? Of course not. That's partly what this class is even for. But we need to be careful here, not always just to simply do what others do, like. That's not going to always be helpful. That should not be your default. This issue actually comes up again in the next point, keeping the right focus, under number two, under keeping the right focus, where it says biblical parenting allows a variety of ways to apply biblical truth. So just go there for a moment. I didn't write down the page number. Does anybody know what page number that is? So let's just, what's that? 25. So just skip over there. We'll do that section right now because I think it fits here better, and then we'll just skip over it when we get there. So, and I would even add, so, you know, major passages here are Romans 14, like we talked about, the vaccine issue, the conscience issue, 1 Corinthians 8, 9, and 10. Those are going to be super helpful in this. There are a variety of ways in which people apply biblical principles. Parents do things differently. You guys know that, right? You guys have been over to my house, other people's homes. There are all different legitimate ways we can apply biblical principles in our parenting, and we need to realize that, one, every family is going to apply things differently, and two, authority resides where? In the application? Specific application? No, in the principle itself. I mean, you guys know this. This is true in every area of life. So just look at your syllabus there, page 25. It says that he gives us some examples of that. Some categories, choices in such categories like etiquette, education, music, dress, entertainment. You know, one family may have convictions in these categories that differ. Parents can consider the practical suggestions, he says, of others, but must make decisions as to what is best for their own family. You can talk about what has been helpful for your own family. You can talk about it in that way, you know, and I think that's helpful, but you have to qualify if it's an application of a principle Well, this is just how we've done it, right? And there are many other ways to apply that. And so we have to be careful here. Can you guys think of any other examples, maybe specifically of this kind of thing? Maybe in those categories. Can you think of any? Have you guys maybe ever been in a setting or in a relationship where a specific application was elevated to a gold biblical standard? Nobody? Really? Yeah.
Like in applying these things, I think for me, I had a really good childhood growing up. My parents did a lot of good things, and so comparing my parenting and like my family's parenting to what I saw in my parents.
Yeah.
That's hard to not feel like in some ways failure, some ways success when I do or don't do things that in these categories with entertainment, TV, and music. And we don't deal with that much right now with a one-year-old, but, you know, we're starting.
What is she listening to? I'm just kidding.
Right. Coco Melon.
Nice.
But, yeah, just that not necessarily with others around,
yep.
But just even looking back in hindsight, what my parents did well, what mm-hmm. they didn't do, and even with her childhood, you know, not measuring success and those hindsight.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really difficult. I didn't even think about parents' relation, you know, the fear of what they're going to think of your, you know, like, yeah, if you got parents in the area, it's like, you know, we don't, but, you know, thankfully, you know, my parents and Melissa's parents are not this way, but I can imagine, you know, they, you know, I wonder what mom and dad are going to think when they come and stay with us for like a week, you know, how we deal with things and what we let our kids do or don't let our kids do that they let us do or didn't let us do. And, you know, that can be a particular application of this. Yeah, it's true. Especially if they don't know the Lord.
And I think even modeling grace when they are believers, like modeling that graceful response in parenting and saying, no, this is what we have decided to do.
Yeah.
And standing on that, on your convictions, and knowing that, you know, this is how we can best please the Lord, and modeling the grace that it should be extended.
Yeah.
Modeling that towards my children, so that one day, whenever that happens with me and my children, they know that response well.
Yep. Yeah, not judging others. They give some specific examples. If you go back to the section that we're in, pleasing God versus pleasing others, I think page 22 and 23, some more specific examples are actually given there. Family devotions. What time do you do family devotions and how often, right? You got to do it every day. You do the same time every day. Well, you know, Danny Gumbricht, they do it like 3 times a day. You know, do we need to do it 3 times a day? Or a specific response, you know, you have kids who, like, you talk to them and like, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. And I'm like, man, like, my kids don't do that. My kids are like, hey, you. It's like hay is for horses. So we've this is just what we've done. We've said, try addressing them as friend. So it comes across a little bit. Anyway, those kinds of things, entertainment, TV, schooling, any of those conscience issues, dinner table etiquette, stuff like that, manners. Homeschooling is a big one. Yeah. Yeah. Like if, they go to public school, probably not believers. Just be careful. Be careful.
You know Paul Washer?
Yes.
Yeah, like he personally. Yes, a whole thing on that where he had gone and went to preach at a church, and then the pastor was like, hey, can you actually help us address something? Because everyone thinks that if your kids go to public school, they're sinning.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, those are definitely in this category, right? So here are two dangers, okay? In that same section, just at the end, And I like what they say here. So two dangers. First, problem arises when families compare themselves to other families in order to determine right behavior and parenting methodologies. Even worse is believing their own methodology is the most spiritual and then judging others' families by that. So the pride of comparison. And then here's where that leads. That second paragraph is a serious issue of pride. To create non-biblical guidelines by which we judge other Christians, here's what it leads to. This destroys unity. That's important. And that has to be said here in this parenting class. For our church, this destroys unity. So it's a serious issue. Now, of course, let me just qualify. This isn't like I can't say anything to these people who live differently or do things differently, or even to my parents or to anybody. Like, it's not so much that you can't talk about it or ask questions, but here's how I would do it. Say something. Don't confront them as though they're in Matthew 18 already, like Galatians 6, 1. You caught in a trespass, you know, because your kids go to public school. It's complicated, okay? Say instead something like this. Help me think through your decision here, because we seem to draw our lines in different places, and I want to understand the biblical principles that informed your decision. Okay? That's better. It's a much better way. And by the way, as your kids get older, guess what? When they go over to their friend's house, they're gonna notice some differences. Right? They're going to notice the Thomases. I'm just pulling an example. You know, watch this stuff. And why is it that you don't let us do that? You know, again, Todd Murray, he has a helpful default response to this. I just wrote it down word for word, okay? It's this. He says this: being a father is the hardest thing I've ever done. It's the hardest thing any man will ever do. And it's complicated, and every daddy's just doing his best to find his way. We're not going to badmouth the other father, but let me tell you one more time why we don't do X, Y, or Z. And here's the principle, and here's how we apply it. They know this principle as well. The Thomases know the principle as well. They're just doing their best to parent the way that God is leading them to parent. I think that's really helpful. So pleasing God versus pleasing others, major competing motives. Next, got to keep moving here. I would say trusting God or fearing, and I would add, you know, here fearing certain outcomes maybe, or this is a broad category. To leave it at trust versus fear, obviously he's not referring to the fear of God here. This is fearing certain outcomes for your children, and I would say, moms, you are particularly vulnerable to this temptation. To parent always with the what ifs in your mind, right? That will consume you if you are not careful. We must learn to trust God in our parenting, which means we cannot let fear of any certain outcomes control how we parent. What if they get hurt? What if they end up in the hospital? What if they don't get a job? What if they fail this grade? It is endless. It's endless. And you guys know this. And of course, it's not just a temptation for moms, but for dads too. Ever heard of the term helicopter mom? We'll talk a bit more about this in the next section, or in the section on keeping the right balance towards the end. I'm running out of time here. Am I?
We started.
I'm sorry. But we can't be so fearful of potential outcome that we become sinfully anxious about every contingency and worst case scenario, okay? We have to learn to trust God, and not just a methodology either. It's fine to have a method, but we shouldn't trust in it, right? Proverbs 21:31, the horse is prepared for the day of battle, but victory belongs to the Lord. your parenting, how your kids turn out, that belongs to the Lord. Spurgeon said this, and I love it, the man of God exerts himself but does not trust himself. That is how you must parent. That's how you must parent. So I was going to stop and ask for questions and input, but we got to keep moving. Number two, keeping the right focus. Maybe we'll have time at the end if I finish this in like 5 minutes. Okay, notice, keeping the right focus. Biblical parenting is not complicated, meaning it is not impossible to understand what we're supposed to do. God is clear about this in Ephesians 6:4. I think that's all that he means here. I mean, I think you could argue like, oh, it's super complicated. What are you talking about? But I think all that they're trying to say here is that, you know, secular psychology makes it complicated, right? It's a moving target. You don't know. It's the subconscious. It's all these crazy things, theories. God is not that way. His instructions are clear, straightforward, and simple. Deuteronomy 34, verse 14. The word is very near you and in your mouth and in your heart that you may observe it. Okay? But that's not to say it's easy. Those are two different things. So it's not simplistic. It is simple. It's not complicated. But it can be hard. It's very difficult. So under this heading, I think, you know, when it comes to keeping the right focus, I think this is meant to be an encouragement to us in times that we might be tempted to look at other parents and wonder, ever thought this? Am I a bad parent because I don't have this many extracurriculars for my kids? You know, little Johnny already knows how to play Mozart. Do I need to have my kids on the keto diet as well? All these things. It's easy to get discouraged and distracted in parenting and not keep the right focus, especially today when there's so much pulling at you, social media, all that stuff. You're going to have to make those decisions to the best of your ability. But just remember, Ephesians 6:4 is your bottom line. So just keep your focus. But notice also that biblical parenting, it says in the next section, so not only is it not complicated, biblical parenting allows for a variety of ways to apply truth. We look at that section, so we're going to skip it. The next one, so we got, like, technically we have half an hour if we can just bar that door, right, from the middle schoolers. Biblical parenting does not involve quick fixes. It doesn't involve quick fixes. This point here, I think, is a reminder to us to keep our focus for the long haul. To keep our focus for the long haul. Just think about it. Faithfulness implies endurance and a length of time. Like, you won't be faithful if you only do well in one moment, but not all the others, right? That can happen in one day, in one night. It's like, I already told you, I was faithful, I'm not being faithful anymore. It's like, no, that's, faithfulness is over the long haul. Rome was not built in a day, you've heard that. Parenting is not over in one teaching moment. The point is, you must think long term. And you need God's help in this. Galatians 6:9. Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time. In due time, you will reap if you don't grow weary. You know, I think this is helpful. Most practically, you know what our tendency? What is your tendency as you parent if you don't keep the long term in focus? Our tendency in parenting is to do what? When our child does something, let's say they've never done before, and you're like, what in the world was that? Our tendency, if we don't think long term, we act like this is the only chance we'll ever get to turn that ship around. And we come down hard and we back up the dump truck of biblical knowledge and give them our dissertation on that issue right there to that two-year-old. All the Bible verses there, that should do it, right? Like, this is, but that is a reflection of what? a quick fix type mentality that has lost the long-term perspective. Not saying you should ignore it, but instruct them, correct them, and move on. Don't strangle every moment and feel like you have to say everything that you know like it's the last time it'll ever happen. You will, I guarantee you, have another opportunity. So be faithful. Don't panic. Keep your focus. Okay, next one. Biblical parenting understands the limitations of parental influence. Now, notice page 26, I think, is where we're at now. I've got to flip a few pages because I've been editing like crazy. Parents cannot control the results of their parenting effort. God does. Listen, you will lose your focus if you think you can. Why? Do you know what will end up happening? Is you will manipulate. And you will seek to control rather than just, I'm just going to be faithful with what God has called me to do. Do you know how you begun, maybe just to give you a practical litmus test? Do you know how you can tell if you've begun to forget that your influence is limited? Any ideas? How can you tell in your life? Any thoughts? If you don't pray for your kids. If you don't pray for your kids and beg that the Lord would do a work. My prayerlessness is a sign of I think I can do this, right? So this is going to happen. I know it. Sorry. Hey, can you tell everybody just to wait? Can you stand at the top of the stairs? Thanks. All right. Last one. Keeping the right motivation, keeping the right focus, keeping the right balance. Page 27 for you guys. Keeping the right balance. Man, we got to zoom through these, but there's five of them. Common areas where balance is required. External and internal. Look at, I don't think you have this, but there's an example that Ted Tripp gives in Shepherding a Child's Heart, where a parent can simply focus on the external justice and fairness involved in a fight over a toy and simply decide who had it first or get a watch to time each for their turn. He says that might help a two-year-old whose reasoning is still limited, but children need to be patiently and lovingly led to learn to give up their rights and prefer others in love, not just take turns. So there's a heart issue behind that you need to also shepherd. And here's the balance, right? It's not that you ignore the outward and just try to shepherd the heart. They're tied, so deal with them together, but you have to, yes, you have to address external behaviors, but not at the expense of addressing heart issues. And as your kids get older, this is going to become more balanced, and that's the case for many of these. We need to help our children understand that their heart is the problem. I mean, without that, their obedience is just cleaning the outside of the cup. And pride, look, I'm telling you, the pride that is already there in your child's heart will seize that as an opportunity, because little sinners, including yours, will be tempted to puff themselves up if you don't get at their heart. Okay? And you'll have a Pharisee on your hands. You know, the reality is, look, your compliant rule keeper of a child needs just as much shepherding as your, you know, little crazy demon child over here. They just do. And we tend to compare horizontally, and yet that's not, you know, that's not what we ought to do. I'm going to have to skip this example. Your job is not done when you just conform their behavior. Read Carey's article, Appendix 4. He wrote Appendix 4 in here. Parenting and the Old Testament law. That's going to be helpful. Okay, next. Next thing to balance, freedom and responsibility. These two things really should rise together. I mean, That's a hard thing to balance, isn't it? Maybe easier, I think, on the front end for little kids, because, but as they grow, this is going to change. Young kids, though, maybe that's most of us, will obviously need many more parameters, right? The language that we used to use at our other churches, you need to shrink their world. They can't have too many decisions. Their hearts are just going to run wild. And you need to shrink their decision. They need to be taught how to make those decisions before you give them that freedom. And my kid's going to eat Skittles all day long, if you give them that chance. I mean, I guarantee it. Sadly, you think the world sees this the other way around, right? They have the perspective, oh, you let your child decide everything. They need freedom of expression. You know, that's the healthy environment. I say, no. And that is everything that comes back to last time, our anthropology, what we believe, the heart of man. But I mean, look, the reality is that if the temptation is there for us to let them make all these choices, because why? Their choices when they're little don't have as dire consequences, and they don't seem to really affect. They might leave the house with, like, you know, looking like an Oompa Loompa because they dressed themselves like mismatched and stuff. But, and you're thinking, oh, that's cute. But the reality is they need help. They can't have just their hearts running wild in all of these decisions and all that freedom. You have to think about not what may be easy now, but you have to think also about what it communicates to them in the long run, that they learn discipline, that they learn self-denial and self-control. They need to learn that freedoms are privileges and that their choices have consequences, okay? And as they get older, you slowly let out the rope. And by the way, freedoms are privileges that can be lost depending on a child's behavior too, right? Okay, friendship and authority, next. Two more, three more. Material here uses the relationship with Jesus as an example of this. The Bible says Jesus is both our friend and our Lord, that his nearness does not diminish his authority over us. And this is another one that grows and changes over time. You've probably seen this, though, and Josue, you brought it up, but you've probably seen this imbalance before. Parents who just want desperately to be their kid's friend, that's not healthy, okay? That's an imbalance on one side. It's also not healthy, though, if you can never get down to the level of your children and just play with them, okay? That kind of relationship nurtures trust in the long run and communicates to your children in approachability. And this is just one more thing I'll say on this. One of our other pastors in Jupiter used to say, and this made a huge impact on my wife, that if you can't get on their level and engage with them early on, just play Legos with them, they likely won't talk to you when they're older. And I think that's really helpful. Okay, next one. Balance between major and minor issues, okay? This is, I think, related to number one, external and internal, because we need to be, as you see there, more concerned about the heart. The heart issues are the major issues. Okay? I think the middle schoolers are like, get out of there. Someone go discipline them. Unbelievable. At least I'm teaching off of an iPad. Yeah. Hey, can you just peek up there and just tell them, like, not to turn the light off? Okay. Okay, is that just...
Another one over there?
I think... Anyway. All right, let me finish. Very quickly. How do you tell between major and minor issues? Heart issues are major issues, okay? Our old pastor Jerry used to say, one way you can tell by asking yourself, hey, that behavior, in 10 years, if I add 50 pounds to that and it's the same issue, would it be okay? Would I be okay with that? I just think that's a helpful distinguish between childish behavior and a character flaw that needs to really be corrected. I mean, is it just, okay, they can learn to wash their hands. That's a life skill that just can be learned. I don't need to just harp on that. But a child who rushes first to always be first to wash his hands, that's a different issue, you know, than a child who comes back to the dinner table, like the example I've heard given, with dirty hands after you told them to wash your hands. Which is bigger? What's a bigger issue? Well, the first one, right? And then lastly, parenting as a sole focus versus parenting as just an important aspect of the Christian life. Remember that parenting is only one of the responsibilities that God has given to you, right? Teach your children, and this, I'll just leave it here, by modeling to them that not everything you do revolves around them. I mean, that's massive. And I've been thankful for, you know, a life of ministry, because it forces us, it's forced our kids to be flexible in that. But, you know, involve them in what you need to do as well. I mean, the reality is, let's back up to your day again. Look, it's yes, you have other things to do. Then help your children, bring them into that, and then help them understand, mommy has other things to do. So why don't you come help mom fold the laundry? And they may not do it as well as you would, but it's a teaching moment. But it also tells them, look, you know, she's not just sitting there watching me the whole time, like, and that's her whole day, you know? Because I'm not, you know, they are not the center of your world. So three categories of challenges to your faithfulness: keeping the right motivation, the right focus, and the right balance.